All right, I know I've shared this with you before, but I want to go over it one more time. At 45, God tapped me on the shoulder and pointed out that I was at a lack of action, I guess is one way to phrase it. Again, I wasn't against him. I wasn't fighting him in any ways, but I just wasn't doing all I could to pursue him. And once I made that decision to truly pursue him, why, in very short order, I realized that I had forsaken a lot of time when it came to teaching my boys about God. And so one of my early on prayers was that God would guide me, bless me with the ability, with whatever little time I might have left, to share with my boys anything that would be important to their, especially their spiritual upbringing. And as I'm asking that prayer on a regular basis, why, one day he led me to a verse. It's Deuteronomy 7. If you want to turn there real quick. It's Deuteronomy 7, verse 9. And 10, it says, "Know therefore that the Lord your God is God, the faithful God who maintains covenant loyalty with those who love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and who repays in their own person those who reject them," or rejects him. "He does not delay, but repays in their own person those who reject him." And as I read that, I thought on that a lot, because he's just promised something out to 1,000 generations. And I know that includes my boys. And I got to think in reverse from the standpoint, well, did that include me? Well, yes, it did, because my parents were faithful. What about their parents? Well, on my mom's side, I knew they were faithful. In fact, I knew that my great-grandma was faithful. So at that point, I'm at least the third generation. And even though I wasn't pursuing God the way I fully should or could, I could look back and realize that God, over time, had truly been blessing our family or families. Now it becomes much more evident to me that whatever I do today affects, either positively or negatively, everyone after me. My children, my grandchildren, my great, I can't say enough greats, grandchildren. It's going to affect them. If I'm pursuing God, he's going to throw an extra blessing on them. I want that layer of blessing, protection, mercy, on the next generation. Last evening, I was blessed once again to witness something that my father never got to witness. He passed away when I was 40, and he passed away with realistic concern for his son Aaron. Because he watched Aaron go to church, marry into a church family, or from a church family, but he didn't see Aaron pursuing God anywhere near the way he could. And I know my dad was concerned about that. It was about 5 years later when God tapped me on the shoulder. And I wish my dad could have seen the change in Aaron Baker. But he didn't. There's a side of me that's okay with that because I know God has plans to divulge that to Brian Baker at the right time, the right place, the right way. But last night, I was blessed to see that all three of my boys are pursuing God in a way I could never imagine. I'm greatly blessed. You've heard me say it. I'm very thankful what God has done for me, to me, Lori, our family tree. And I don't want to just quietly thank him. I can go incense my prayer closet, and I certainly did last night, and say, Father, thank you. I haven't stopped thanking him. But last night, Forrest had organized a revival. And the title or the theme of it was Hearts on Fire. Soul on Fire. And I thought about that as well. And then in the midst of it, Herb Hansen, in his brief talk, he made the comment, one doesn't simply stand still when the fire is right around them or right at them. They're going to move. They're going to put some energy into moving away from that heat, in a sense. I don't want to simply quietly thank God. I want to proclaim him the way Forrest did last night in front of strangers, potential strangers. And there was strangers back in the back. I know Aaron and Sharon look back there. There's a group, we couldn't see who they were, how many there were. We know there was probably at least five or six of them, because one of the songs, why all of them had phones holding up with the light sign. Forrest, you probably couldn't see it, or did you? You did see it. They weren't part of our group. We don't know who they were. But they actually put back some energy at the end of the song. They yelled and screamed. You know. I realized something last night about myself. I kind of don't like it, and I kind of don't know what to do about it, but I want to do something about it. Because as the revival or concert is going on, I realized, crud. I never went next door to my neighbors and said, hey, if you have time, would you consider coming out? And there's more than a half dozen people I just realized, oh, crud, I could have and I should have asked them. And along with that realization and Herb saying, someone that has the fire isn't going to stand still, I realized and I came up with a term for myself. And I suspect it applies to some others, maybe not everyone. I've been a spiritual introvert. Is that a good thing? Is that somebody that's on fire for God? It's one thing that when I'm with him and him alone, and I share my exuberance, my true joy, my thankfulness. But if I don't share it with others, what good is it? Because he created me for something. And it wasn't just to simply please him with a one-on-one relationship. Because what's the two greatest commandments? Yes, to love him with all that exuberance, but then to show that same exact exuberance to everyone else. And there's a lot of times where I just go, oh, I don't want to push my beliefs on everybody, my religion, my Sabbath, my whatever it is, I just don't want to overburden them. And we shouldn't. But that doesn't mean we can't say something, especially do something that shows our belief. I want to proclaim what God has done in my life and in the lives of people around me. He is so undeniably real. And a lot of times we think, well, okay, yeah, there was this one time 10 years ago, felt kind of real to me. I haven't seen or heard from him since. Really. Because he's here all the time because of his great love. He's not the one that pulls away. It's us. He's not simply real to me. He should be real to you and everybody else around you. Sadly, some people just don't know how to look for him. So we should tell them how to look for him. Go to Psalms 105. Psalms 105 and verse 1, O give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the peoples. The last word of that sentence, is it plural or singular? It's plural. What peoples? All of them. Doesn't matter what their background is, where they're at, why they're there, what they're doing while they're there. But to all peoples, we are to proclaim his name, give thanks to him, make known his deeds. Verse 2, sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of all his wonderful works. That's what we need to do. Earlier this summer, and I think I shared this with you, I've told you the story how I have my retirement replacement. I'm training at work. And how that came to be, that I get a phone call out of the blue one day, a stranger, at least to me, says, hey, I met your son Clay, and he tells me you're a goldsmith, and I've always wanted to learn how to work with precious metals. I'm a blacksmith. I was wondering if I could stand over your shoulder for an hour or so. Well, yes, Val, you could. But let me tell you what's happening at work. There's an opportunity. I'm going to be leaving here in a couple of years, and we're looking for somebody to train to replace me. And in the long run, Val says, I would love to do that. That sounds like an amazing opportunity. He's been there a year now, and he's doing very well. He will replace me. God did that. I know God did that, and I shared that with you very easily. My boss's wife comes in 3 or 4 months after Val had been hired, and we finally get to introduce the two of them for the first time. And while we're talking, she kind of asked the question, so how did you find him? I said, I didn't. Now, of her family, she's the most religious. They're all fairly diligent churchgoers, but she puts more effort into it. So I'm a little bit more comfortable in sharing some of this with her. And she says, so how did you find him? I said, well, I didn't. God did. She says, what do you mean? So I told her, I said, some stranger called me out of the blue when we were looking, after I had been praying that God, if I am to train somebody, and I didn't want the Har's feeling a void after I was gone, in a sense, you know, if that could be filled, if they could be blessed by God, I was praying for that. And then Val calls me out of the blue one day, and I tell him, and he expresses immediately that this sounds like a tremendous blessing for him. And she says, did you tell my family that? Meaning my other three bosses. I said, well, to some extent. What she was really asking me is, she says, did you tell them the God part? I didn't. I don't know why. They know quite a bit about my religious life and pursuits and thoughts. And I just kind of felt like I'm being pushy about God. Not the way I should have handled it. If they hear me say that God just blessed us with an opportunity to maybe hire a guy as my replacement, and they really don't care for the God word in the sentence, that's between them and God, not me. I don't need to push it a lot harder. You know, ask him 10 times, do you understand God this? Do you really understand God this? I don't need to do that. Go to 2 Timothy 4. Verse 2 says, proclaim the message, be persistent whether the time is favorable or unfavorable. There are a lot of times I think, oh, maybe this is the wrong time to talk about God. And here it says, be persistent. And again, I don't think that's that nagging tap on the shoulder. Hey, are you listening? Hey, pay attention to me. I don't think it's that kind of persistence. I think it's more of, no, I'm to be persistent in just diligence. If you have an opportunity, make use of it. 2nd half of verse 2, it says, convince, rebuke, and encourage with the utmost patience in teaching. For the time is coming when people will not put up with sound doctrine, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own desires, and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander away to myths. Did you see what verse 3 really just told us? We still have opportunities to proclaim. And those opportunities may be dwindling very quickly. Forrest wasn't afraid. We shouldn't be afraid either. Whether it's with strangers or whether it's a comfortable audience like this one. You know, these days, I can look back on my life and I see ways where God worked truly divine miracles. And I think because of his promise he made in Deuteronomy 7. Not necessarily promises to me, but to my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents. So some of these you've heard, maybe most of these you've heard, but I'm going to cover a few more of them again because I'm going to proclaim. And I want you to look back over your life and think about, where did God step in and spare you, strengthen you, encourage you, protect you, just simply bless and love on you? Because he's been doing it. I shared with you when I was probably about 6 years old, my sister Sharon, we'd have an event like last night that we were looking forward to, and it's raining. And my sister was known as the family God intervener when it comes to rain. She's only 4 or 5 years old, but my parents had taught us how to pray. Sharon, ask God to make it stop raining. And it got to the point where every time it rained, we didn't ask her to do this, but from time to time, there'd be something special. Sharon, can you ask God to stop it rain? She would, and it did. Now, last night, it was raining. It rained through the afternoon, and it kept sprinkling and misting, and it was like, okay, this should be stopping any time, and it didn't feel like it was going to stop, and it's 7:30, and it's still raining, and there's still kind of a cloud, but all in the distance, you can kind of see some lightness, like maybe it's going to stop any minute, but it's still raining, and 7:45, it's supposed to start at 8:00, it's still raining, And people are saying, well, I've been praying about it. But did they put all of their faith into it? Meaning, if you've asked and you expect it to stop, do you believe it's going to stop? About 5 minutes before showtime, I'm up on stage talking with one of the guys. And I just said to him, look, you and I must be living right. We're the only two people that we can see in this big space, and we're the ones standing in a ray of sunlight. And it's still raining. It was truly rain at that point. At just about 8 o'clock on the dot, it stopped. It was done and over with. He was faithful. He did answer the prayers. In my late teens, there was me and a close friend who actually got me into jewelry that I knew through the church. We were going to go up to Orr, Minnesota, right in the Canadian boundary waters, and there was a summer camp being held for church teens. We're going to go up there and pick up two or three of his siblings, but also we were taking a couple more campers up to the next session. On the way back from Orr, we wanted to stop in the Upper Peninsula to look at a couple of waterfalls. One we'd heard about but didn't know where it was at, how to get there. We finally found out how to get there. And we got to the top of it, and we were looking down the falls, and one of the girls falls. And it sounds like a boulder had come off the cliff and landed in the water. I didn't see it happen. I just heard it. And then I looked at where the splash had been, and Lori Joseph is face down in the water, just floating. It had been about 80 feet fall. And two people were down near the water. Actually, three people were down near the water. They all three dove in to rescue her. I was on the cliff climbing down. And thankfully, I did not get in the water because all the rocks down at the base of the waterfall were just filled with, you know, moss and lichen and algae and extremely slippery, and they're all rounded from being polished by the water. And they couldn't get out of the water. They couldn't get her out of the water. But because I was up on the rocks, I could help pull her up. We pulled her out of the water, and all I could do was just kind of lean back and pull her up. Her back was against my chest. And I just kind of laid back because I didn't want to slip back into the water. That'd be trouble for all of us in a sense. And we got her up. She's not breathing. It'd be very different. I'm underneath her. She weighed more than me at the time. I can't easily get out from underneath her to start CPR or something like that. And we just started praying, the four of us. We didn't all know all that was wrong. I could look at her right hip, and it looked like, is it the femur up here? That looked like it was broken in two and protruding out to the side very badly. She had jeans on, but her leg was messed up. You could see that without any problem. And she'd laid on my back for about a minute, and I lifted up her head because someone said, we need to check, see if, you know, let's check her head. We pulled it up, and I'm just drenched in blood. She had a huge cut on the back of her head. And all of a sudden, she starts coughing. We weren't able to do CPR. God had answered that prayer. It took her a while. It took the rescuers a long time to get to us and get her out of this little canyon we were in. And they got her out sooner than we were able to get out. And then we ended up talking with the police, I think, you know, for a few minutes before we were, in a sense, allowed to head off to the hospital ourselves to go see her and to call her parents. And we get to the hospital, and she'd been there, I think, for about 45 minutes. And we go into her room. She's awake. when she's smiling and laughing. And the first thing I said, what about your leg? She says, what about it? She says, it's my head that hurts. She says, I got stitches. And a doctor walks in, and I turned to him and I said, didn't you guys check her leg out? He says, we did x-rays all over her. She's fine. I said, her leg, it was broke right below her hip. He says, no, it's not. There's nothing there. She says, my head's the only thing that hurts. I knew God had done something miraculous way beyond just getting her to start breathing again. It's only been a few times when God has just fully caught my attention. Hey, look at me in the eyes. Just look at me right now. I'm sitting on the bleachers with a group of young adults. I've known Lori for a handful of years, known who she was, known her brothers, but never paid any attention. And all of a sudden, God just literally took my face and turned it towards Lori. I didn't realize it was God at the moment. I can look back now. But I remember that in that moment, something strange was going on. And I even told myself, it's like, I wonder why I never noticed this before. Meaning Lori, her. I mean, it was very distinct. No, you need to just focus on this for a moment. I don't think there was ever a time in my relationship, or our relationship, I mean, literally from that moment, I don't think there was ever a time when I thought, I'm not certain this is the one. No, the whole time it was like, I'm pretty certain this is the one. I need to keep pursuing this. I'm 24, I think it was, and I'm struggling to find a career. Forrest, feel familiar? And I think maybe I found one in this new venture of jewelry, but I'm not good at it, haven't been doing it very long, and have tried a couple of avenues inside of it. And I'm told that there's a jeweler in St. John's that wants to hire a jeweler. And I'm not looking to be hired by anyone. I'm looking to do more repair work for any jeweler, but at my own location. And I'm told that this jeweler only wants to hire and have someone work on his jewelry at his location. I said, I don't think that's where. Well, you should at least talk to him. All right, fine, I'll call him. So I call up Alan Haar, and he basically tells me that. And I said, well, I wouldn't give up my other clients. I said, you have a bench and tools, at your store? He says, oh, yeah. I said, I would entertain being a subcontractor for you and coming up and doing your work in your store, but, for 1 or 2 days a week. But, that's it. I don't want to be an employee. He says, all right, we can talk about that. So we did. I started working for him. And within a short amount of time, I realized this is somebody that is not like some of my other bosses. They care about their employees. They're looking after them. And it took me about 3 years. Finally, one day, I went up to Alan and I just said, I want to become an employee. He says, I was afraid you're going to ask me for that. This is going to cost me a whole lot more money. You're cheaper as a subcontractor. He says, but I'd love to have you. And when I hired in, I already knew that he had some type of benefits program that he had tried to entice me to become an employee with earlier on. So I knew that was going to be there, but I didn't know what it was going to be. We were set to go out to dinner one night. And prior to the dinner, he says, do you come up with a number, what you want your salary to be? I'm going to put you on salary. I said, okay. And he says, and we can negotiate it, He says, because I may not like your number. I said, all right, fair enough. We get to dinner, and I've come up with two numbers. I've got this number I'm going to ask for, and I don't think it's unrealistic, unreasonable, but it's a healthy number. And I got this number here that I really don't want to go below. But at that number, me and Lori, for the first time in our lives, are going to feel a sense of comfort, especially with a regular paycheck. So he asked my number, and I throw it out, and he says, I wasn't thinking that high. I said, okay, what were you thinking? And he comes right back with the exact same number I had as my satisfactory number, the exact same number. And I just simply said, I can live with that very easily. As we kept talking, he says, by the way, he says, you don't have health insurance, do you? I said, no. He says, you do now. Or he says, at least you will in a month or so when, you know, it'll kick in. He says, so you're the first full-time employee that this business has ever had other than myself. He says, his dad wanted to set it up so that Alan could eventually own the store, actually buy his father out when the time came. And so he put some financial vehicles in motion that would help Alan do that. One of them was to give Alan a pension of a matching 25% of gross. This is huge. So for every dollar that Alan earned from the corporation would give Alan another 25 cents to put in a pension plan. Companies didn't do that. But Alan's dad did that because he wanted Alan to accumulate something, some substance, so that when the time came, he could purchase the store out. Well, the way corporate law works is if you offer something to one full-timer, you have to offer it to all the full-timers. So that's what Alan meant when he says, this is going to cost me something. He now had to give me the 25% also. I knew that was big, but the money's not coming into my hand. It's going into some account somewhere that I never really get to see, and once a year, maybe twice a year, I see what the number is, but, you know, I just know it's in my name for retirement. And it keeps growing, and it keeps growing. And 1 year, the number grew by 36 or 37%, you know, just in investments. That number today is huge, at least in my mind, supposedly for our retirement. I don't know why God blessed us with all that. I know it wasn't to go sit around, whether it's in Florida or anywhere else, for our pleasure. It's for something else. I'm excited to see what that something else is. Come the mid-2000s, I have some money. I want to invest it in one sense. I want to keep making forward momentum. So I start dabbling in real estate and flipping houses and things like that. Things seem to be going really well until 2008 comes along. The housing market collapsed. However, Lori and I, so I had a partner, we had a corporation together. The partnership had did some projects, and those had went relatively well. And then one day I saw a house that was a HUD offer, and I told Lori, I think you and I, just the two of us, should buy this. You know, no, not with the partnership, but us personally should buy it and flip it. Okay. So we did that. And when we bought it, I bought it. I had looked at it and I thought, okay, this really needs some new flooring, new carpet, some new paint, a little bit of touch up here and there, and we're going to flip it, make a handful of thousand, you know, tens of, you know, maybe $10,000-$20,000 on it. We get in there and I start looking at it, and it's like, no, I don't like this kitchen. No one else is going to like it. Let's gut the kitchen. Kitchen walls really look nice now. let's gut the living room walls because they're plaster and lath and there are waves in it and paper and wallpaper on it. That led to the bedroom. So we gutted the whole house. We put it on the market. And there was rumblings going on that things are going south and maybe quickly. And we'd signed a note. You know, we now have two mortgages, in a sense. And it was starting to get a little bit scary. And my real estate broker, I had my real estate license at the moment, so I was the seller's agent for myself, or me and Lori. But my broker, he says, hey, I've got a young couple I think is interested in your place. They gave a full price offer, but with a contingency that I had to give them back $7,000 to pay off a car. So really, it's not a full price offer. But I just knew we better take this and get out of it quick. We did. Me and Lori, for all the time and labor, and the boys helped out too. For all we put in, we probably got paid $2 or $3 an hour. We really didn't make anything. But in less than 30 days, the market had collapsed. What that house sold for 30 days later wouldn't have sold for even two-thirds. I knew God had just spared us from something. But during all that, God had blessed me with Lori's dad, who had come to our place and helped me learn how to put an addition on our house. He blessed me with the ability to learn skills more than just working with jewelry. I could, in a sense, build a house if needed. Hank, came and things were okay. We had tenants in all of our units. We'd sold what thought we needed to sell. But almost 2 years go by, and things are still no better. And we lose our tenant in our commercial space overnight, totally unforeseen. And he's not simply a tenant. He's purchasing to own. And he has $50,000 in equity built up towards the purchase. And he walks away. Without his monthly payment, we can't sustain the payments on our other properties. So I walk down to the bank president, and I tell him what's going on. And Craig just says, Aaron, it's like this for everybody. I understand. I'll do what I can to help out. Then the realization comes that I think I'm going to have to file bankruptcy. Never thought I would be in that situation at all, because I'd watched my dad for 20 years of my life do everything he could to move forward financially. And he just kept taking two or three steps backwards. I told myself, I'm never going to be like that. I'm going to learn to be successful financially. Hadn't told Lori. The feast is coming up. The fall feast is coming up. And Andy Laws is just, at that point, is just an acquaintance I'd met at the feast. I knew he was a co-owner with his brother in a company that does collection services. So I thought, if I could just get to the feast and sit down and talk with Andy, he'd tell me how to protect myself from all of this, because the creditors are going to be coming soon. And building up to the feast, my life was imploding in every direction you could possibly think of. except for my marriage. At least I don't think my marriage was imploding. Maybe it was. I don't know. I got to the point where I was in such a fog that I couldn't really concentrate on hardly anything. I get to the feast, the opening night of the feast, I see Andy, and I said, Andy, I have to talk to you before the end of this feast. Doesn't have to be tonight, but I have to talk to you. He said, all right, Aaron, we will. The whole feast goes by, and things are imploding around me all during the feast. The last day of the feast, the last sermon of the feast, and another big explosion takes place during the sermon that I have to somehow deal with, that I feel tons of backlash from. You can ask me about it later. I've kind of maybe told some of that, but I just about can't take anything anymore. Closing prayer said, and I'm walking down the aisle, and here comes Andy right for me. He says, Aaron, we never got to talk. And I said, Andy, I can't leave here until I sit down with you. He says, come on, let's go right now. And I had helped set up the feast site, and so there was always someone running towards me saying, Aaron, we need help with this, or we need to know about this. And Andy was a little bit of that same situation. There was usually people going towards him. We knew we had to just go hide somewhere. So we literally found a back area of the kitchen. No one would look. We were back there for about 3 hours. I just laid it all out. And in the long run, he says, Aaron, he said, you know there's nothing I can do for you. I said, I knew that. He says, you know there's only one person that can do something for you. I knew what he meant. I said, yeah, I think I knew that. He says, Aaron, I got to ask you 3 questions. Okay. I've lied in over my lifetime, but it wasn't always my goal. I wasn't looking to lie. So it wasn't always my first go-to, put it that way. But there was something about that was taking place in this conversation that I was going to be 100% transparent and open with Andy. I just knew that would be to my benefit. I wasn't going to try to disguise anything, hide anything. I just wanted to make sure Andy saw or heard the whole picture. He said, Aaron, do you pray? Yeah, every now and then I think of something to ask God. Aaron, do you read his word? I take my Bible to church with me. Aaron, do you give back to God all he requires? And as soon as those words left his mouth, my brain went into a new spinning. I think he just asked me if I tithe, but he didn't ask that. Why didn't he ask me if I tithe? Why did he say, do I give back all that God? What's the real answer? I don't know. That's what's going through my head. But out of my mouth, I just said, every now and then I feel like I have a few extra dollars in my pocket and I put it into the offering. He says, Aaron, he says, you've just told me that you're going through the worst time of your life. That you understand God is the only one that could help you out of it. And you're not giving him a single reason to help you out of it. Andy, I'm all in. I'm 100% in. From here on out, if I know to do it, I'm going to do it. And I've done my best to do that. I didn't think of this at the moment. It was probably several years later. I had a face-to-face moment with God. It was Andy's face I was looking at. It was Andy's voice I was hearing. But I was face-to-face with God. I've shared that with Andy. I've also shared James 5. I gotta look it up. I didn't write it down. James 5, verse 19. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth and another convert him, let him know that he who converts the sinner from error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. I felt it. I don't know if I fully understood it. I truly was at death's door, not physical death, but eternal death's door. I had the choice to say yes or no, but those were the only two options. And saying no was certain death. The last of that verse says, and shall hide a multitude of sins. Andy had shared with me prior, and he's shared with many people, the struggles that had gone through his life in his teen years and into his young adult years. Stories of addiction, of abuse. And Andy had made a commitment to God. I don't know if Andy at that moment knew what the impact of this 3-hour long conversation was going to be. But him and I have talked a handful of times since then. I always thank him. Not so much for sitting down with me for 3 hours when both of our families were looking for us, couldn't find us. But for deciding to be a man of God, a man that God could trust with the life of another man. Mine. And just like Forrest last night and the others, I want to be known to God as one that he can entrust me with the life of another. I don't have to know in the moment that I'm helping their salvation. I just want God to be able to trust me as his servant. After that, as I shared with you, I watched two of my boys get baptized. Forrest and I had talked about it a couple of times. And I was starting to become concerned about him. And last year at the feast, he walks up to me without any... I had zero clue this was coming. He says, Dad, I want to get baptized. But I know because of my baptism at 18 that baptism is a good thing. But it's not the end product. You still might have to face God and say, no, I'm all in. And since Forrest's baptism, I didn't question God. I knew God had already was calling him, working with him, protecting and blessing him. When 2020 comes along, church life has not been comfortable for a couple of years because our congregation's imploding for multiple reasons. Then COVID comes. Well, right before COVID, we're down to 10 people. We agree as 10 people we're going to keep meeting, but we really don't know what God has in store. We don't know why He has what's already taken place in store. Whether or not we should keep meeting here, as far as the expense goes. But we have enough funds that we can meet at least for a year without worrying about that. So we decide to. And I'm asking God, because we no longer have elders. I wasn't an elder. I just told the 9 that were here, if you want to keep meeting, I'll help facilitate that, whatever that means. I didn't know what that meant. I said, okay, that's what we want to do. But I'm constantly asking God at that point, what is it we're supposed to do? Are we really a congregation? And if we are, what good are we to anybody other than ourselves? You know, I'm concerned about that person that might walk through the door. I mean, how intimidating is it to walk in to a church building this size and there's only 10 people here? You can't blend in very well. You can't hide in the corner very well. You're front and center, period. And just a couple Sabbaths into it, several Sabbaths into it, right before his church starts, like a couple minutes before we're supposed to start, I wanted to take something out of my car or get something out of my car. I don't remember what it was, but I didn't need to do it right then, but I just want to get this off my mind. So I go out to my car, I shut the door, and I look up, and there's a strange car, and there's a lady walking towards me from that car. Like, I didn't see that when I walked out here, and I don't recognize her. And I said, can I help you? And she says, is there a church that meets here on Saturday? I said, yeah, that's us. We do. If you're here to join us, come on in. She says, oh, I didn't think there was anybody here because there's only like 3 cars here. No, that's us. That's it. She comes in. She says, oh, I got to go get my boys. She brings her 2, and I think there were 7 and 9 year old boys, brings them in, stays for services, but as soon as service is over, she's kind of bolting. But I stopped and talked to her for just a moment, and she said, I'll be back. Okay. And the next week, she was back. And I don't know what this really means, but her name was Erin. She's very quiet, reserved, conservative, you know, not looking for groups of people, not wanting to be the center of attention. She's just a quiet person. But she comes 2 Sabbaths. The third, I think, I'm pretty certain it was the 3rd Sabbath, she doesn't show up. That same Sabbath morning at about 3 a.m., my phone goes off. It's the sheriff's department. I have to go on a sudden death, infant death. And I get to it, and I meet the mom and the dad. They'd had the baby in bed with them. It had been fussing. Mom had fell asleep, and it suffocated. But I also met her parents. Her mom and dad were there. They lived close by. And it's one of the coldest nights of the whole year. I think this is in February. And the baby's mom is outside sitting on a picnic table, and she just has a light blanket wrapped around her shoulders. Of course, she's shivering, but she doesn't want to go back inside where the baby's at. And her mom and dad are standing there trying to console her as best they can. Now I show up, and one of the first things I would like to do is just move them in where it's warm, because it is absolutely freezing. And she keeps saying no. And her dad hadn't said anything. And finally he walks. Mom had kind of been coddling her. Or I shouldn't use that word. But, you know, just had her arms around her. And finally dad went over to her and leaned down. But I could hear everything he was saying. He says, you know God still loves us. He didn't want for this to happen. We don't know why it happened. And we don't like it. But God still loves us. And I watched her turn up to her dad and said, I know, you're right. I was there for probably almost 2 hours, and shortly before I left, I had a chance to go over to him. He was off by himself. I went over to him and I said, you know, I've been on a lot of these calls of just death. And I said, but you're the first time I've seen a real father step up and be a true dad and remind his family that in the toughest of times, God's still there. God still loves us. I said, Dad, thanks for doing that. Your daughter needed that. And he truly acknowledged me. I get to church later that morning, and Aaron's not here. It's like, oh, I was hoping they were going to start coming on a real regular basis. The following week, she shows up. And I ask for intercessory prayers. Anybody have a prayer request? Well, last person I expect to raise their hand is Aaron. She's the first person that raises her hand. I said, yeah, Aaron, what can we pray for? This is my sister. Lost her baby son last week. And the hair stood up on my neck. It was the call I was on. Is there a person in this world that can tell me God wasn't involved somehow, somewhere inside of this? And while we're sitting at the tables over here, again, there's only like, now there's like 12 of us, 13 of us, I don't know. And I'm realizing what's just happened, but Aaron has no clue. Because Aaron wasn't there that morning. I mean, maybe later on she was at her sister's house, but not in the morning. She wasn't there with her parents. So just to make sure that there's not just a coincidence going on, I said, well, can we pray for your sister and brother-in-law by name? She says, yeah, it's the name. Services get over with, and Aaron's not bolting for the door. She's hanging out just a little bit. She's gotten a little bit more comfortable with us. And I pulled her aside and said, Aaron, I need to tell you something. This is not going to be easy. And I said, and it's not going to make any sense. She says, what's that? I said, I met your mom and dad last Saturday morning and your sister. She says, what? I said, I volunteer for the sheriff's department. I was at your sister's house when the baby died. My dad told me about you. Aaron and her sons attended regularly for about 6 months, and about 3 or 4 months into it, she comes up to me one day and we're starting to do some things for the kids, kind of like we do now. She says, I would really like to be a part of teaching the kids. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you're too quiet, you're too, you know. But let's give it a shot. She opened up, she was great with the kids. And that told me that God had plans for this congregation. We didn't know what, for how long, why. It didn't matter. God had plans for this congregation. Then COVID hit. We went from being 12 or 13 people to, by the end of 2020, we were, I think, on a regular basis, over 80 people. Didn't see that coming. In the midst of that, Jerry and Tom from Flint, that congregation, the Bames, started coming here on a regular basis. And I knew Tom and Barb Bame from a feast, two feasts, I think it was. And nice people. And Tom one day just, I asked how his week was going. He says, "Oh, it's not too bad. We're getting used to living in the motorhome." "What do you mean you're living in the motorhome?" He says, "Oh, we're living in the motorhome in our driveway, our daughter's motorhome." "Why are you doing that?" "Oh, we got a little bit of water in the house." "When?" "Oh, a couple weeks ago." "From what?" "Well, remember those two dams that burst, you know, up north of Bay City?" I said, "Well, yeah." He said, "That went through our living room." I said, "What do you, you're living out in your..." He says, "Yeah." He says, we got 3 or 4 inches in the first floor of the house." He says, "I think my son-in-laws are going to cut the drywall about 4 feet up and put a new piece of drywall in, and you know, we'll be fine. Do some new carpet, we'll be fine." And I said, "Well, I've got Mondays and Wednesdays off. I'll come up and help." What a huge blessing God provided with me. It's been over 10 years. God said, worked it out with me and my boss that I could have 2 days a week off. I only work 3 days a week. I've done this now for 10 years. And when that came about, I told God, I said, "If you're going to bless me with this, one of those days is going to be to serve others." The other day, it looks like I have opportunity to help my mom. My mom was declining in health. My sister was taking care of her. And Sharon needed a break. And all of a sudden, I have Wednesdays off. I can give Sharon the break she needs on the days she wants it, the exact day she wants it. Now all of a sudden, mom has passed, and Tom is saying he needs a little bit of drywall and some carpet. And I get up there, and his sons-in-laws had truly, and they were full-time jobs. But on the weekend, they had went in and they had cut the drywall up about 4 foot. Great idea. But I looked at it, and in places from the studs, it was 1.5 inches thick. It wasn't drywall. It was plaster and lath. And it was like, "Tom, we can't just stick a piece of 1/2-inch drywall up and feather it in." He said, "Yeah, I was kind of looking at that." I said, "Tom, look at the wiring. Look at this plumbing. We've already got it kind of opened up." I said, "We should replace the wiring and the plumbing." "Tom, we got to rip all the cabinets out of the kitchen. They're all the floors are gone. Now the sidewalls are, you know, water's crept up those." "Yeah, I saw that too." I said, "Tom, we just need to gut your house." "Oh, I was hoping we wouldn't have to do that." He says, "I think you're right, though." I said, "All right, let's do it." I got to go over there for a little over a year. Got to know Tom really well. Had some fabulous discussions about God. He's diagnosed with cancer. Quick cancer. A few months later, he's gone. I got to spend the last big handful of months with him. And again, Tom and I hadn't seen each other except for those two feast sites. We had a lot in common. He was very energetic in music too. We had that. My ordination comes around. I'm not worthy of this.
I don't care what anybody says about me. I'm not worthy of this. I'm certainly not capable. But God, let me know, at least for the moment, that's where I want you. Clay and Sebastian had been baptized. Sebastian chasing a girl out in West Virginia. She's not baptized. Her parents had been attending church, but she's not baptized. I'm a little bit concerned about that. Because through this time, getting to know God and His Word a little bit better, it's like, how can you enter into a physical covenant when you can't, if you haven't been able to enter into spiritual covenant with God? That was really important to me. Then one day, my phone rings. My daughter-in-law doesn't call me. She'll call Lori, you know, let us know. She might text us and, you know, say, hey, such and such is going on, or you need to know about this, or, you know, something like that. But she doesn't just call me. She says, hey, I want to talk to you about something. I said, okay. She says, we're going to the feast with you down in Florida. I said, yep. I want you to baptize me. And this whole new thought process is starting to come into play now in reading God's Word. You know, we've been talking about with the kids the story of Abraham. And dynasty probably is the wrong term to use, but God wants us to be building up dynasties through Him. You know, our trees should be strong and full. You know, we're told to multiply, fill the earth, but not just a people of God's people. And all of a sudden, I see our family tree not simply growing a new limb on it, but a strong limb. Thursday morning, my sister texted us and just said, pray for Mariah and the baby, my niece. She's due mid-August, we knew that. But that text told us that something's not right. So we're praying, waiting for some type of update, and found out that Mariah had, they'd went in for something, but they found out the baby was breech. She was up instead of down. So in the long run, on Thursday morning, they made the decision we're going to do a C-section. And the baby's fine, healthy, so is mom. But our families have grown so close over the last handful of years, and partly because of Forrest. Forrest has a love for family life. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. He wants it on a regular basis. And he's kind of demanded that a minimum of once a month we're going to have the Fitch Baker family dinner. And so we play some games, but, you know, have just gotten closer together because of that. And I'm watching my nieces and nephews grow spiritually. And Mariah and Justin, I've watched their marriage, and now they've got a little one. I know they're strengthening that limb of the tree spiritually. Lori and I got to go down to Indianapolis and watch the marriage of John and Maria's son, Andrew. And I didn't know and hadn't met her before. I'd heard a little bit about her background. Andrew, I knew on a light level. I had a couple of good discussions with him. But at the wedding, it just became so evident, here is a couple that has a full-on headset of we're going to do this God's way, no matter what that means. And they're young, 20 and 19, and they got it all together in one sense. They don't, but they do because they're going to do it God's way. And their families are 100% behind them. They're going to do everything they can to help them do it God's way. Deuteronomy 7, verse 9 says, "The faithful God who maintains covenant loyalty with those who love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." And just to put that in perspective, from Adam to Abraham, there was 20 generations. From Abraham to Christ, there was 42 generations. And that spanned 2,000 years. So if we took an average, we'll disregard the Adam to Abraham generations for just a moment. From the standpoint, some of them live for 900 years. And that skews the numbers a little bit. But if we take the generations from Abraham to Christ over 2,000 years and we average it out, that means every 47 years was a new generation. If we use that average to today, 6,000 years, that barely gets us over 100 generations. And God promised to 1,000. But let's say that we're 50% off. It's not every 47 years is a new generation. Let's cut that in half. 23 years. Every 23 years, and you take that over 6,000 years, that puts us to 261 generations. We're nowhere near God's promise. No one's going to be left out of the promise, except those that choose not to love him and do his will. His promise is deep-seated in the Baker clan and in your clan. What you do today, what I do today, is affecting the next 100, 200, 300, 500 generations. Is it going to be a positive effect or a negative effect? So we should all be proclaiming, rejoicing, worshiping, and confident that whatever is taking place now, because some of it's not comfortable. Bill's not comfortable right now, even though he knows God is still being faithful and loving towards him. It's still not comfortable. But whatever's taking place now or next is not only within God's will, but's fully wrapped up inside of God's great love and mercy, and he is faithful. Go to Ephesians 2. Ephesians 2 and verse 1. "You were dead through the trespasses and sins in which you once lived, following the course of this world, following the ruler of the power of the air and the spirit that is now at work among those who are disobedient. All of us once lived among them in the passions of our flesh, following the desires of our flesh and senses. And we were by nature children of wrath like everyone else. But God, who is rich in mercy, out of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead through our trespasses, made us alive with Christ. By grace we have been saved. And raised up us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus, so that in the ages to come he might show the immeasurable riches of his grace in the kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. For by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not the result of works, so that no one may boast, for we are what he has made us, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand to be of our way of life. We're created for good works. Not selfish ambitions, but good works. And if we pursue the good works, we are going to find joy and peace, happiness, comfort. I need to do better. We need to do better when it comes to doing the good works that we've been prepared for. Look back at your life. Count up all the times, or as many as you can remember, that God intervened, poured out his blessing, protected your life, and share it with others. Share it with your family. Start sharing it with your family. Let your kids understand that God is a part of your family, that he does miracles inside of your family. I want to be more like my son Forrest, willing and boldly telling any and all that would hear who God is and what he has done and what he wants to do for all of us. We need to stop being spiritual introverts.